Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by this morning. I want to apologize about yesterday. There seemed to be some major technical difficulties with either the computer or the phone lines. When I tried to dial in to Blog Talk Radio, I usually do it about, I don't know, anywhere from 10 to 5 minutes before and get on and make sure that I've got all my other stuff lined up. And I couldn't get through. It kept ringing busy. As if you live here in Florida, you know the last few days have been strange. One minute it's 90-something degrees and the sun is beating down. And the next minute the sky is black and thunder and lightning. So I'm going to assume that maybe weather had something to do with it. But whatever the case, it was very difficult even to use the cell phone held here in the acreage yesterday. So I'm glad we're back online this morning and everything is a go. The game plan today is to discuss the second half of the report that is said to have come from Johns Hopkins Hospital. And we did talk about the fact that I was, once I posted it on Facebook, I had many people, kind of associates of mine and friends, let me know that they had been told that it did not come from Johns Hopkins. And if you listened to the show Tuesday, you know that I reported that I had been aware of it because somebody had sent it to me a long time ago before I left the Institute. But it's still honest, and it's still very true. But the fact that a renowned hospital and teaching school like Johns Hopkins didn't put it out there doesn't really shock me. It also wouldn't shock me to find out that they did put it out there and then decided that it didn't really jive with what they do and decided to say that they didn't. So God knows. We live in a world of pretty much if you say it and you mean it, it should stay out there. If you say it and you mean it, but you're afraid it's going to rock your boat, then a lot of times you deny that you said things. And it's too bad because what I read on the show and what Shelley and I discussed on Tuesday in the first part of it in regard to chemotherapy and radiation and all of the above, I know to be true because I have witnessed them firsthand. I don't want to take away, though, from the effort, energy, technology that's gone in to find these modalities and enhance them to the point where they have brought people to a better place. We need to have respect for what is true. And I believe that in the big picture, that is true. It just saddens me to know that when we find something that can help one thing, it hurts so many other things. And I think that's what's true of most of those modalities. Certainly the radiation and certainly the chemotherapy are deadly. And that's the whole point. They're used to kill cancer. The problem is there's no GPS. Again, we talked about this with the pills. There's no GPS on the chemotherapy or on the radiation. They've tried. They've come up with many, many ideas. They have masks. They have all kinds of apparatus that they wear to pinpoint the radiation and the chemotherapy to particular places. And I have talked to a young man many years ago who had been a cancer survivor for well over 10 years and had suffered many other maladies. And he stayed on a raw food lifestyle, but he also underwent the medical modalities. And he was doing very well. He was diagnosed as a very young man with brain cancer. And he went on the program, the raw food program, and he also stayed with a doctor, an oncologist. And the oncologist helped him a lot. And years later, after I had known him for probably 8 years myself, the tumor that was in his brain kept shrinking from his lifestyle and from the medical modalities. And it actually dislodged itself and rested behind his ear and was affecting his equilibrium and his hearing. So he came to the Institute and had a discussion with our on-staff oncologist and with the directors of the Institute. And they decided that he would attempt to do the chemotherapy that goes in and goes right to the tumor. And indeed, it shrunk it almost to the point where they couldn't detect it, although it was not gone. That particular effort bought him some more time. We have lost this young man since. Not certainly for lack of trying to overcome his challenges. He had young children, and I think of him often because he was quite a trooper, as most of you are out there who are fighting cancer and giving it the fight for your life. Literally, I want to take this time to applaud all of you. Whatever your choices were, you are amazing. And most people will never understand, unless they walk in your shoes for a little while, exactly what this has been like, what it's done to you, and the different kind of challenges that you meet on not only a daily basis, sometimes an hourly basis. So stay strong. We may wake up tomorrow morning and there will be the answer of the millennium. So today I want to move on, and we're going to talk about the second half of this report. First, though, I have Shelley I'm going to bring in. Good morning, Shelley.
Well, are you good there, morning, Shel? How are you?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
Doing good. Sorry I got in a little late. I was having antenna issues, as usual. It took a few minutes.
I think we'll just install an antenna in you. I think that's what we should do. We have another caller, and I think it might be Daniel. I think I recognize the number. Good morning. This is Renee.
Good morning. Happy belated birthday. It's Daniel.
Hi, Danny. How are you, honey? I thought that was
Hi, Daniel.
I'm wonderful. Good morning. Good morning. All right. I'm just listening in this morning.
Okay. Wonderful. I am going to, we're going to continue the conversation that we started Tuesday. We got through all the medical modalities, and Shelley and I discussed them at length, and now we're going to go to some stuff that is kind of near and dear to our hearts because it's what we did for a long time and a lot of what we believe in regard to staying healthy. It has a lot to do with your lifestyle. And we did talk at length about the fact that the medical modalities, and I said this morning, and I think it bears repeating, and that is the fact that many of the medical modalities are awesome. And there's people out there who have trusted a doctor who's cared, and things have gotten better. Whenever we pick something apart a little bit, I don't want anybody to think that I'm finding fault in any individual who's dedicated their lives to make things better. I just think that it bears conversing about, because I think that the more we understand, the better decisions we make. I have a childhood friend who I messaged this morning, who lives quite a long ways away, but she has been enduring all of the medical modalities, and she's graduating this week. She's finished most of her treatments, And she's a strong, good-hearted woman with lots of grandchildren and children. And I want to wish her all kinds of everything positive that can possibly happen to anybody after what you've already been through. So, and on that note, anybody else that's out there that's struggling with these kind of things, stay strong. And you can always call us and you can always talk to us, because remember, detox doesn't just come from your body, from your physical body. It comes from where you're at in your head. And mm-hmm. a lot of times, talking through things and getting things off your mind, or at least out there to put it on the table, examine it a little bit, and maybe lessen the strength or the hold that it has on you. So we're going to start with the very beginning of this second half of this report, and it's called What Cancer Cells Feed On. Sugar is a cancer feeder. By cutting off sugar, it cuts off one important food supply to the cancer cells. They want you to know, though, that sugar substitutes like NutraSweet, Equal, Spoonful, etc. are made with aspartame. Aspartame? I never say that word right. Aspartame. And it is harmful. Now, you know, I'm going to do a side note on this. Many, many, many years ago, they did a lot of testing with saccharin and decided that it was deadly, that they did a whole bunch of tests, even at Cornell University, in regard to rats and other rodents, and they fed them saccharin, and it was deadly to them. So people have known this for a long time. So then aspartame came into the picture, and it was supposed to be less harmful than the saccharin itself, and apparently that's not true. So there's been discussions. There's lots of books out there from really cutting-edge people that have really dissected the world of aspartame and saccharin and all those different things, and they are not good for you. A better natural substitute would be Manuka honey or molasses, but only in very small amounts. Table salt has a chemical added to make it white in color. Better alternative is Bragg's aminos or sea salt. Shall we discuss that a little bit? Sugar is a big thing, and sugar is something that if you came to the world-renowned institute that we talk about all the time, if you had cancer, you couldn't even eat fruit. Shall we discuss this a little bit, Shel?
Yeah. Well, actually, I have a couple of things to say about that real quick. First of all, in most reports that you're going to read, and you've already done it several times on this show, they always talk about animal experiments, you know, testing on rats to prove this or to prove that. And I just want to take the opportunity real quick to explain that animal experimentation, first of all, is archaic, should never have been used. And there are many, many publications by doctors and scientists. I have a book here that's called 1,000 Doctors and Scientists Against Vivisection, which is animal experimentation. And the reason for that is that animals' systems are too different from human beings. One single fact alone is that if you test on rats and mice are actually closer genetically than monkeys and human beings, okay, but yet monkeys and human beings are 98% identical in DNA, all right, but when you test on rats and mice, you will get different results 50% of the time. You can't test on a human male for some drugs on a human female because it will harm the human female. So you can't even test within our own species depending on what the particular drug is. All right. So to test on a rat or a cat or a dog or a horse or a pig or a bird, which are, these are all the animals they use, is ludicrous. So when they tested saccharin on rats, they megadosed them so ludicrously that you would have to be putting a pound in your coffee, number one, all right? Although I don't like saccharin, it's certainly much, much safer than aspartame. It's all they serve in Europe. They don't serve aspartame in Europe. When you go to Europe, you can get these old saccharin pills. They have them on every counter. I mean, no matter where I went, when I went to Germany recently, there were little saccharin pills everywhere. I'm surprised that that article doesn't say that the best option, because any kind of maple syrup or anything like that still has sugar in it. The best option if you have cancer or you have any kind of sugar issues like a diabetes would be stevia or xylitol. That's a much, much safer option. Xylitol has more of a sugar flavor and consistency. It's kind of grainy, all right? You can also get stevia mixed with xylitol, which is what I use. I actually get stevia supreme. I order it through Amazon, and it's delivered right to my house. You can get it in packets or containers. But the whole issue with animal experimentation is a huge fallacy. It doesn't work. It's never worked. It's been proven it doesn't work. But what it does do is, because the FDA requires it, which it shouldn't, okay, it allows drugs to go out on the market that have been proven safe on an animal, all right, that end up proving to be horrendous for the human being. So in reality, the minute you've given a drug tested on animals to a human being, guess what? You've just tested on the human being. It does not prove safety. It does not safeguard the human being. So animal experimentation is really, really a ludicrous non-science, a pseudoscience, and it should never be employed in trying to root out the safety of something for a human being. They should do clinical studies and things like that. All right, so that's, I'll set that aside. But going back to the sugar issue, xylitol and stevia are much safer. And, you know, this information has been known for a long time, Rainey, and what always shocks me is that when you go into an oncology center of a hospital, they always have like a bowl of candy or cookies or something out, and I that boggles my mind. I had a friend of mine who was going in for chemotherapy, and she said they always had bowls of candy right in the middle of the office. So here they're having people go in there to get chemo, and then they're feeding them like the main nutrient source for cancer, which is sugar.
Am I on? Can you hear me, Rainey and Shelley?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, you know what's funny is two things, you know. Well, you made me think of that, you know. You go to the dentist, same thing, Shelley, and you come out, and there's a bowl of candy. And it always makes you wonder, well, didn't I just get my teeth cleaned, and this is exactly what you say, no sugar? And then, you know, you're talking about the animal testing, and it made me giggle a little bit because people have known for a long time, like you said, that animal testing isn't always as accurate and that, you know, it really isn't. And, you know, you listen to the commercials about all these antidepressants and all these other medications, and do you really want to take something that says these are the side effects and they give this whole list?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it just made me giggle because I thought of that. You know, they give this whole list of this and this and this, it can cause this. You know, if you're pregnant or nursing, blah, 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 and, you know, it could even lead to death. I mean, who wants to take a medication that's going to do all that to you?
That's right.
You know, so I had to chime in there and say that.
Well, you know, right. The truth of the matter is we live in a world of bad choices. I mean, for how many years now have they put things on cigarette packs, and cigarette business is still booming. Can't smoke
that's
anyplace.
True.
You... where people are smoking and you're like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in a bad zone or something. And
right.
I still know a lot of people who smoke every day. And sugar, you know, we talk about the candy.
Right.
It's still a reward in elementary school.
That's very true.
Hypers up a kid. How most kids who've got hyperactivity or ADHD or any of the things that have been diagnosed for the years,
makes
candy
you
is
think.
One of the absolute worst things. So is juice. Most of your bottled juices that aren't fresh juice. And if you have a major problem with any kind of sugar disorder, whether it's diabetes or obesity or your... you know, how you react energy-wise, even real juice, it's probably got too much sugar in it for you.
It's true.
When you have, years ago, before they made apple juice and things like that for babies, the doctors would tell me, I will speak about this firsthand, take regular apple juice, Renee, and make it half water and give that to the baby.
Right.
So that's what I did, because that's what I would do. And your baby had hiccups, if your baby had upset stomach, if your baby had diarrhea, you know what the treatment was back then? This is very old age, and this is like mom's remedies kind of thing. Very weak tea, regular orange pico tea, with sugar in it, and it stopped the diarrhea. So
it's not the sugar that stopped it. It's the caffeine, and there's an element in tea that's binding. Because I used to drink black tea for the same reason, without the sugar. The sugar, I guess, was just to make it palatable and to make the baby want to. But the sugar would make the baby drink it because they would like the sweet taste.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. So for years, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Mary Poppins, yeah.
Mary Poppins, right.
Right.
And,
wow.
It was acceptable the way to do it. And, of course, sugar cane and sugar business is big, big, big business. Mm-hmm. Big industry.
Well, Rainey, do you remember, I won't say the woman's full name, but we had, I believe her name was Cindy, and she had breast cancer, and one breast was excessively enlarged. And during the couple of weeks on the program, she was doing incredibly well. She was responding. Her breast was reducing. And then she had to run an errand and got in a car accident. And the steering wheel smashed that breast. And it's called, when you have a tumor and it gets crushed in any way, it's called insulting it. And the injury insulted the tumor, and all of a sudden it started growing massively. Do you remember this incident?
Wow.
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so what happened is she was responding so well to lifestyle, but because of this shock to the tumor, it started increasing in size all of a sudden. She was just in horrific pain. So the director found an oncologist down south, I think in the Miami area or further south than that, who was doing what's called targeted chemo. This is what we were talking about before when you said it doesn't have a GPS. Well, what targeted chemo is where they lace the chemo with glucose or something, some sweet composition, because the cancer cells, like I said, the number one nutrient for cancer cells is sugar. So they were actually lacing the chemo with glucose so that the cancer cells would gobble it up, and hopefully the healthy cells would sort of ignore it and allow the cancer cells to grab up most of the chemo and leave more of the healthy cells on. It was kind of like a new concept in dealing with chemo. And she ended up doing relatively well on that. She stayed on the raw food lifestyle, kept doing everything she was doing, but did go for these treatments. And over time, she did get some relief from that. But it was growing it accelerated the growth again because of the car accident, which is also emotionally traumatic. So it was a combination of the impact and then the emotions you go through when you have any kind of a trauma that sets off an acidic condition in the body. So it was a combination of the accident and then our emotional reaction to something like that kind of spearheaded this spontaneous acceleration to the tumor. But that was something, and again, they were using sugar, tagging the chemo with sugar to attract the cancer cells.
Well, and that's smart, quite honestly, and it certainly sounds like an innovative idea. I don't know what the long-term effects. We know Cindy is no longer with us. And this is usually the story, very sadly. I said something Tuesday that I couldn't think of anybody that had been a cancer survivor that had really survived. And I did think of somebody.
Wow.
Yes. And it's like 20 years. And I was I thought to myself, thank God I thought of somebody, because that really, really depressed me when I said that out loud, because it gave it, you know, some truth. And
a cancer survivor from chemo or from the lifestyle?
Well, this person did the medical modalities but has cleaned up their act. I'm not going to say that they're a raw food vegan because they're not, but they changed their life totally. They changed their lifestyle totally. And
you and I both know somebody who's been cancer-free for over 15 years, who had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, had a few rounds of chemo, stopped the chemo in the middle of a treatment. If you remember, she tells this story. She stopped the chemo in the middle of a treatment, actually pulled the lines out of her arm. Now, when they put these lines in her arm, the nurses were wearing gloves because it's that toxic, but she felt like she was going to die during the treatment. She was just getting too sick, yanked the lines out of her arm, left with the doctor following her, telling her if she didn't come back in and finish her treatment, she'd be dead in 6 months. And her response to the doctor was, the chemo's killing me faster than the cancer is. I'll figure it out.
You know, it's funny. I mean, it's not funny, but Shelly, you know, that's what we've said all these years, 7 years already, when my grandmother passed away. We said, you know, if the cancer didn't kill her, the chemo killed her. Because,
yeah.
You know, she deteriorated so fast. I mean, we looked at her and we said, God, would we still have Nana today? Even though we knew she had cancer, would we still have her longer today before or after chemo? We always question that. We still do because, you know, she wasn't sick until she started chemo.
Right. Well, that's the same story with this friend I'm talking about, and I don't know if Rainey realizes
yeah.
who I'm talking about or not. But
I don't.
It's Jody. And she had gone through three treatments of chemo. They told her that she had one of the most aggressive forms of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So they were giving her the highest potency of chemo. That's why they had to wear gloves when they were putting it in her, because they didn't even want it touching their own skin. It was that toxic. And she had seizures from the chemo. It damaged her heart. And she only had a few treatments. I think it was three treatments. Literally stopped the third treatment in the middle. And started finding out a different way to heal herself. She had already lost all her hair. It already toxified her body that much. But she said that she had no symptoms. When she was diagnosed with having non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, she had no symptoms. She wasn't suffering. She wasn't in pain. All right. And she said while she was being treated with the chemo, she said she told the doctor, she said, I'd rather die from the cancer because at least I was living. She says, I have no quality of life on the chemo. And she did what I did. I mean, I didn't have cancer. I had other issues. But she did what I did. She started researching, reading, found this lifestyle, cured herself of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, became cancer-free. And this was like 15 years ago. She is still cancer-free to this day, still lives the life.
You know, I got to say something about this because, and this person is so okay. I forget that story. This person
yep.
is so okay that I really,
wow.
a lot of times when somebody has that kind of trauma, that's how you think of them all the time. Do you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? You, like,
yep.
identify them with an illness like that. And this
wow.
person is good that I forget that happened to her, which is
yeah,
a,
you met her. You would never think she was sick a day in her life if you ever met her.
No.
Yeah.
That's something that the mind can do. That, you know, you connect someone with something, another illness or a position or anything, and you think, forget what they've gone through,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they, yeah, or
well,
what their family even went through. I mean,
right.
you mean
one other story, Reenie, just and then we can move on. When I was working as a program counselor, obviously I had the opportunity to speak to actually probably a couple of thousand people. And I have to say probably 30% of the people that called me to come to the Institute called me because they knew somebody that came in when we were back in Boston, when Hippocrates was back in Boston, that 10 or 20 years later were still cancer-free. And that's why they were deciding to come. So I heard this story many, many times. There was one woman who called to book her husband in there because she had been diagnosed with stomach cancer. They wanted to remove two-thirds of her stomach, put her on chemo and radiation. She refused it. She was just a holistic person. She wasn't a vegetarian, but she didn't believe in chemo and radiation, found the Institute somehow, went there, became completely cancer-free, has her entire stomach, never had to get the bag or anything. And 20 years later, this was 20 years later, her husband ended up getting bladder cancer, and they wanted to remove his bladder. He was so riddled with cancer, they wanted to remove his bladder and put in what's called an Indiana pouch. And she brought him to the center because she had already had that experience, remained cancer-free for the entire 20 years, and then ended up bringing her husband there when he had a cancer event. Mm-hmm. And I heard that story many times of people that remained cancer-free, as long as they maintained the lifestyle, though. They didn't have to maintain it 100% like they did while they were at the center, but they had to maintain some level of a good lifestyle, both with diet, what they chose to drink, and their emotional attitudes. It was a combination of the whole package. And people that maintained that, that embraced the lifestyle, would remain cancer-free for decades, not 2 to 5 years, but 10, 20, and even 30 years. And I spoke to dozens and dozens and dozens of people that had that story or that told that story because that's why they were coming. So-and-so is a friend of mine or is my uncle or my cousin or whatever. They came to you 20 years ago. They're still cancer-free, so now I'm going to try it. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, the point and the biggest thing you can do for yourself, and I don't care what kind of challenge you're talking about, is your state of mind and your attitude. And everybody that you've just mentioned and all the people that we met at the Institute during our tenure there, you could almost pick out, unless it was really too late, and sometimes it is,
yes.
You could pick out the people who were going to survive. And it wasn't just because of the choices, although choices that we make are imperative to our well-being, but it's also about your state of mind and your attitude. We had a relatively famous person with us who was very connected to one of the fathers of this lifestyle, and she succumbed to a cancer, and everybody was shocked. Because they're like, oh my God, how could this person, you know? Because they couldn't be happy, and happy sounds like such I don't know, an unimportant word, or a word that we use every day. Have a happy day, happy birthday. Hope you're happy.
Well, one of the things I have to make one comment about that, Rena, because I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. First of all, she wasn't just unhappy. She suffered a horrific, violent trauma early on in her life that she never recovered from because she suppressed it. She never dealt with it and did anything about it. So you're right. So the emotional component, you have to clear traumas and things like that. You have to deal with them. You've got to get some sort of help. She never did. She just suppressed it. She didn't deal with it. But the other part of that is even with that, she lived cancer-free for 25 years because of this lifestyle. So I think despite this horrendous trauma that she suffered that did ultimately overwhelm her and was ultimately her demise, the lifestyle still assisted her in living cancer-free for several decades until this emotional trauma then kind of reared its head and finally pushed her over the edge. But if it were not for this lifestyle, I don't think she would have survived 5 years.
Well, that's for sure. Anything that we do helps us. That's absolutely positively true. Any decisions we make that are good for us help us. But it's still at the end of the day, and we're not supposed to live forever. We get that. So I don't want to butcher this to make it something bigger than what it is. But the truth of the matter is if you don't, people always say to me, Rena, if you could have a wish, what would it be? And they always expect me to say that I'm healthy. And I don't say that. I say that I'm happy. Because when
right.
you're happy, everything else kind of falls into place. I'm sorry, but it does. And it sounds,
I agree with that.
But it is the truth. Being organized in your own head, happy with who you are, happy with who you spend time with, happy with your surroundings. It sounds so untechnical, and yet it is so honest. So the point is that good choices in what you put in your body, food-wise, good choices in what kind of conversations you have and what you let people say to you, take in and what you let fester in your own head, that's your choice. It's your choice to throw it out. It's your choice to hang on to it. All of these things have to do with what kind of health you're going to have. I had a wonderful conversation last night with somebody very near and dear to Shelley and I and to a big group of our friends. Her name is Becky. And,
yeah.
She called for my birthday. We spoke for an hour. She's living in Tennessee now. She's been gone for quite a long time. My favorite name for Becky, and everybody forgives my profanity, was No Shit Becky. And there was a reason I called her that. But she didn't let all the little stuff muddle up the rest of the stuff.
Right.
She'd cut to the chase, and she'd say, this is the way it is, and then we'd get past it. How awesome is that?
Yeah, she was
pretty
awesome.
If I wanted to from anybody, I'd say, Becky, what's the deal on this? And she'd tell me right out, no holes barred, no niceties, no nothing. What's happening, Rain? Up, up, up. Am I right, Shel?
That's right, yeah. I have to admit, I met so many people at the Institute, and so many of them are still very, like you said, near and dear to me. But I have to say that Becky was probably, will always be one of my favorite people because of that. Because she really just was a very awesome human being, very, very down to earth, open and honest, truthful, but like you said, very direct and no nonsense.
Mm-hmm. She was. And we laughed last night. She said, you name me, and she said, you were right on. And I said, yes, I did.
those are the kind of people we need in our lives, people who are direct with us.
It is the truth. You surround yourself with the people that you know care, first of all, care about you. Second of all, every now and then, put you ahead of them, which is an awesome thing.
Thank you, Reenie. That's what you do for me.
Yes. And you've done that for me, honey. Both of you have done that for me. I'm very blessed in that regard. I have some wonderful friends. I have good family. It's all about that at the end of the day. But we're being too full, so we're going to move on with some other stuff here this morning. And I want to get to the milk part of diet, because this is an important subject for so many people who suffer from chronic sinus infection, asthma, all the breathing disorders that young people have, older people have. Milk causes the body to produce mucus, especially in the gastrointestinal tract. Cancer feeds on mucus. By cutting off milk and substituting with unsweetened soy milk, which we no longer believe, and cancer cells will starve. Soy milk has some bad parts in it, too, they're discovering, and I think it's probably better than whole milk, but I won't swear to that, and I'm not a scientist. I'm just going by the things that I know. I do not like the taste of soy milk. I drink almond milk, and I enjoy almond milk. So, and I've had sinus infections all my life. I once grew a cyst in the cheekbone, under the cheekbone in my face from sinus infection. Mm-hmm. And very, very painful to have a rip-roaring sinus infection. And it makes it more difficult for you to breathe, gives you post-nasal drip, all of the things that are so... and it's annoying as hell to have an infection like that. Even if you can function. I mean, you feel like you're blowing your nose all the time. You're always coughing and gagging.
I hate the nasal drip. That's horrible.
Milk and milk products are the absolute worst for that. So I think we don't need to discuss this other than to say that this is true. There are many choices of almond milk out there today, and there are low-sugar almond milks. There are flavored almond milks. At the Institute, they make homemade almond milk. They soak almonds and use the milk that's derived from the soaked almonds. It's sweet, it's delicious, and it doesn't leave you feeling like you have to keep swallowing 10 minutes after you've swallowed it, if you get my drift.
Right. Well, one of the things about the milk substitutes, Rainey, like you said, almond milk is probably one of the best because it's high in omega oils. There's also hemp oil, hemp milk. I drink hemp milk because it's also high in omegas, and I'm allergic to almonds. So that was a great substitute for me. I stopped drinking soy milk years ago when I became aware of the research of how it messes with women's hormones and stuff like that. So I don't drink soy milk anymore. But hemp milk, almond milk, rice milk. Now they have sunflower seed milk, and there's another one. But anyway, but if you go to the store, oh, and there's also wheat, which is probably not good for some people if you have wheat allergies. But they can literally make milk out of any kind of grain or seed. They soak them. They get a milk product for it. Some of them are fortified with calcium and things like that. Some of them are unsweetened. So I get the unsweetened. There's no sugar in it. I think 1 gram of sugar or something like that. If you have any kind of a sugar issue, you want to look at the sugar content. But I love the taste of the hemp milk. My mother gets the sunflower seed milk. She likes that better, and it works for us. One thing I will say about milk when they're not talking about there is, yes, it causes ear infections. It causes a lot of these other things. It's also the number one cause of adult-onset diabetes, and it also causes milk and milk products cause osteoporosis, which shocks people when they say that, because they always think of the calcium. Osteoporosis is not caused by a lack of dairy calcium. So if you have osteopenia or osteoporosis and you drink more milk or eat yogurt, which a lot of doctors, because they're not taught about the nutritional end, if you're taking in milk, you're going to increase the problem, because the calcium that's in milk and dairy products is not the same calcium that's in our bones. And what happens is, When you're taking in a lot of the animal protein, you will actually leach calcium from your bones in order to digest the calcium, the animal protein that's in milk and milk products. Our bodies lack the enzyme to digest it. It's in the book by T. Colin Campbell called China Study. He actually discusses this whole connection with milk and osteoporosis. There's a couple other books out there also that discuss that, but that book specifically talks about it, and I think it's worth mentioning.
You know, I want to say something about the China study. I have had at least 100 people through the years tell me that reading the China study changed their lives. So if you do have the opportunity to get it from the library or get a copy of the China study, I have one that I lend out. If anybody would like to read it, all you have to do is call me, and you'll have to, meet me someplace, and I'll let you use it. But it's a great book, and the gentleman that wrote it is a really, really nice, gentle man. So
yes.
Let's move on to something that we've kind of touched on, not a lot. Cancer cells thrive in an acid environment. Meat-based diet is acidic, and it is best to eat fish or a little chicken rather than beef or pork. Meat also contains livestock, antibiotics, growth hormones, and parasites, which are all harmful, especially to people with cancer. Okay, now this is a very, very big subject. This is a small paragraph, but we could really spend a lot of time on this. I don't want to do that because we have a lot to get through. But I do want to say that today there's been a lot of information in regard to, first of all, chicken. There are places who, you know, there are
there are references to chicken that are not great. I think we can suffice it to say that if you can go organic, farm-raised, no hormones, no additives, things like that, and you cannot live without meat in your diet, that's your choice, and the better choice to make is going organic, farm-raised. There's a lot of stuff out there now. It's more expensive than your run-of-the-mill Walmart package of chicken, frozen chicken. It is, you get less meat for a lot more money. If these are issues for you, I would tell you to quit eating chicken. And the only thing you can do for yourself in regard to meat, unless you give it up, is to move to something. Think about eating all of the additives that they put in the food. Sometimes they do it with injections to make themselves get more money out of one poor beast. Mm-hmm. So if you really want that in your body, that's your choice. And I'm not here to tell anybody what, you know, what they should be doing. I like to think that Shelley and I, and now Daniel today, are enlightening people as to what the better choices are. We are not telling anybody what they should do or what they shouldn't do. But if you're struggling and you have lots of aches and pains and you're like in your 40s, chances are you've taken in some stuff that doesn't sit well with you that came from a piece of steak, a piece of chicken. For a long time, fish was the smart food, and you could eat almost any kind of fish was okay. Now they realize that you're also better off with farm-raised fish. And I want you to think about all the things that we know that have been dumped in our waters, all the trouble that we're having here in Lake Okeechobee, all the trouble in the waters out in the ocean. Again, if you're okay with taking that stuff in, then that can be your choice. And it's not my game plan, even though I'd like to think that someday I will save the whole world. Something in my poem tells me that that's not really going to happen. But I do think it's smart to know what you can know and to take in the information that people are willing to give to you. So this, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that our waters are dirty, that farmers and agriculturists use a lot of things to zip up the growing, the production of everything that we eat. Organic food is the best way to go because it hasn't been touched by pesticide. One of the biggest poisons in the world today is pesticides. And the funny part about it is it doesn't kill all the bugs, but it hurts us like hell.
That's right. That's right. And that's the funny part about it. Remember, I was talking yesterday about that doctor who had won the Nobel Peace Prize. His name is Dr. Otto Heinrich Warburg, obviously from Germany. And in 1931, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in medicine for his important discovery that the root cause of cancer is too much acidity in the body, tying right into what you just said. The human body is supposed to have a pH homeostasis of 7.365, which is the normal mean level, that's where we're supposed to be. And a lot of people dip under that. And he found that cancer cells maintain and thrive in a lower pH as low as 6.0 due to lactic acid production and elevated CO2. He actually did a lot of research about this, produced his research, and won a Nobel Peace Prize in 1931 with regard to that. So it surprises me that since 1931, the United States hasn't put out more effort into modalities that would raise the alkalinity instead of going to something as horrific as cancer and as chemo and radiation. You know, when you think of the time frame when that came out. But again, this was in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of other countries have had the opportunity to spend a lot more money on a lot more effort. And I think there's something about the mindset of some of those other countries about what's important and what isn't important. Again, choices. It's often about the choices. So we're like down to 10 minutes, and I still have quite a few on here. Cancer cells, a diet made of 80% fresh vegetables and juice, whole grains, seeds, nuts, and a little fruit helps put the body into an alkaline environment. About 20% can be cooked food, including beans. Fresh vegetable juices provide live enzymes that are easily absorbed and reach down to cellular levels within 15 minutes to nourish and enhance growth of healthy cells. I think Shelley and I both agree completely with this particular paragraph.
Yes.
The only thing that I can add to it would be balancing your alkalinity is also helped by a very easy, quick thing that you can do every morning. And some of you are going to say, what? I thought lemons and citrus were acidy. But if you squeeze a half of an organic lemon, and if you can drink it just straight down like that, the juice, all the more power to you. If you can't, a little bit of warm water, a little bit of stevia, however you can get it down. And funnily enough, people that ate like horses when I worked with them, anything and everything, Greeks believe in that lemon juice every morning without fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a lot of overweight Greeks, don't get me wrong, but most of didn't suffer from a lot of the other maladies, and I do believe it was because they believe in doing that lemon elixir every morning, and it will help balance your body. So
the whole thing about citrus fruits, like you just said, people think of the citric acid. That's the composition of it, but the effect on the human body when you talk about any of the citrus fruits is that it alkalizes you. Watermelon is highly alkaline, and asparagus in the vegetable kingdom is the highest in alkalinity. So asparagus, watermelon, and lemon are the three of the highest alkalinity and the impact they have on the body in raising the alkalinity.
And if you juice watermelon can be very, very sweet, but one of the most important parts of a watermelon is the rind. I know when you were a little girl, Grandma would say, don't eat the rind, you'll get a bellyache. But in truth, if you are a juicer and you juice the rind along with the red meat of a watermelon, it is incredibly good for you, as is cantaloupe. Things like that, especially if you're not feeling well, juicing those kind of melon fruits are really good for you because they also have the effect of kind of settling your stomach a little bit, those kind of melons.
Mm-hmm.
And nuts, please do not run out and buy a giant jar of salted cashews because they're not that good for you. They're almost everybody's favorite. You should be eating dehydrated nuts and without salt, but there are other spices. We used to have a great pistachio at the Institute that had like a chili seasoning on it. They were delicious. And just plain dehydrated nuts. They're very, very tasty, and once you get past the fact of thinking it's supposed to be salty, they're delicious. So all of those things healthier than probably some of the things that you're doing right now. We also made air-popped popcorn for a snack, not on a regular basis, but like when we did parties and stuff like that. And we would make up different toppings to put on the popcorn out of spices and different kinds of powders and stuff that we had in the kitchen to cook with. So there's lots of things you can do because a lot of people say to me, what do you snack on? And homemade pickles are another thing. Homemade pickles are good for you, and they will help your alkalinity as well if you make them the right way and don't put a whole bunch of sugar or a whole bunch of anise seeds in them and things like that. So there's
mm-hmm.
lots of different things you can do that are much healthier for you and keep you feeling better with more energy and with better mobility. To obtain live enzymes for building healthy cells, try and drink fresh vegetable juice. Most vegetables, including bean sprouts, and eat some raw vegetables 2 or 3 times a day. Enzymes are destroyed at temperatures of 104 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 40 degrees Celsius. Again, you can get supplemental enzymes. If you go on Amazon, somebody spoke to me about this yesterday, there are some wonderful deals with good enzymes that aren't in gelatin capsules that are really, really good, not horribly expensive. But here's the deal. If you've been told to take a whole bunch of enzymes, when you need the enzymes the most is when you eat cooked food. Because
right.
cooked food is not enzymatic. Raw food, raw vegetables, you know, all the years I've been saying raw food, people say, does that mean you eat like steak tartare? No. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about raw, in particular, green vegetables. And if you have your green vegetables raw 2 or 3 times a day, you don't need a whole bunch of enzymes. If you eat a lot of cooked food, even if you're a really, really strict vegetarian, but everything is cooked, when you cook it, you kill it. And it's no longer enzymatic. So when it gets into your system, it doesn't find its own way to the poop chute, if you'll forgive that. It stays in your belly. And the other thing that is a very important thing to remember, and that's not drinking a whole lot when you're eating cooked food in particular, because you make the same kind of mush that they feed pigs to fatten them up. So all of these things are just little tidbits and things that you need to take into consideration and make your own choices in regard to how you want to do that. But enzymatic food nourishes you and moves through your body and leaves the nourishment that your body requires and then goes to waste. That's what makes it a wonderful way to eat. You should be avoiding coffee, tea, and chocolate, which are all high in caffeine. Green tea is a better alternative and has cancer-fighting properties. Water is the best to drink, good water, not water from the tap. And even then, I there are no real laws anymore or yet governing bottled water. So I have no input for that. I mean, Shelley and I both know there's some awesome things you can do to your water and have them be better, but we're not on the show to sell things. So investigate water. Investigate water and make choices that are best for yourself.
We could actually do an entire show just on water because of the plastic bottles. The plastic
yes.
bottles are being proven to like affect hormones and stuff like that. So we could actually do an entire show just on water. And there is safe bottled water because I've bought it. When I travel, I get my own bottled water and I take it with me if they sell it at Whole Foods. So we could make some recommendations. Maybe we'll do a show on that.
Okay. We can talk about water because that is a big subject. But as I said, we're down to nothing and there's still stuff here. Cancer is a disease of the mind, body, and spirit. I think we've already touched on that. A proactive and positive spirit will help the cancer warrior be a survivor. I love that particular sentence. Cancer is a disease of the mind, body, and spirit. A proactive and positive spirit will help the cancer warrior be a survivor. Anger, unforgiving bitterness, put the body into a stressful, acidic environment. Learn to have a loving and forgiving spirit. Relax and enjoy life. Amen.
Amen.
Cancer cells survive either in oxygenated environments. So exercise, deep breathing. There's classes on breathing all over the world. And there's oxygen in things like wheatgrass and stuff like that in all of your green foods. So I want to say thank you. Thanks, Shell. and say have a happy, happy day, everybody, a great day. Bless all of you, and thank you for participating. And Daniel, who we lost in midstream, I hope you have a great day. Daniel is an up-and-coming young man. You'll read about him someday in the paper for sure. So thanks, Shell. I'll call you in a few minutes.
Okay. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.